During this series of interviews, everybody has told me names of people I should be talking to. One name keeps coming up over and over again.
Brian Forrest?
And that name is Dave McCormick, who is described by many as a music and programming genius.
Oh.
And you're still working.
Yeah.
You started a long time ago. When, where, and how did you get into the business?
CHML, which is a chorus station now. Anybody knows what that means? On my 14th birthday, it just so happened. The best birthday gift I ever got. They said, we'd like to hire you to work after school, weekends. Basically a gopher, file records away. We used to have record libraries back then. You know? And you filed the 78s and the 45s and the LPs and the transcriptions, and they paid me. I was supposed to work after school Fridays and Saturdays and summer holidays, but I just stayed there. I just stayed till midnight where they threw me out asking questions, how do you do this, how do you do that? That's how I got started. They called me Little Davy. I was about 4'9" back then. I was the golden gym.
Was there somebody shepherding you around, teaching you the ropes?
Yeah. Those days they had operators, and then they had the announcer booth. And now at CHML, it's time for Rosemary Clooney. And I was the kid in the back playing the turntables and the commercials on acetate discs and the 45s and the 78s, and they paid me.
Did you move into announcing from there?
No, I didn't, because my voice hadn't even changed. I was just a little bitty kid. They used to call me Little Davy, as I said. But I was the gopher. I would go get the coffees. They didn't have coffee machines in the radio station. You'd go down the street to the cafe and get 3 with sugar, 2 with cream, whatever. No, I didn't. My dad was transferred out to Vancouver by his company. I tried to get the same kind of job here. I would knock on all the doors. I was a few years older, and knock on all the doors trying to get that kind of a job. They said, we could hire you full time, we could hire you for weekends, but there's no such job in our agency. Make a long story short, I went to UBC because I didn't know what else to do, and got into the radio society there. It was Radsock in those days in the basement of a rock. We kept track of all the radio stations, what was going on there. I would skip classes and just find out what was going on. Anyway, long story short, there was an opening at CFON, which was just came out of the CKMO era. It was a pretty boring radio station, and they hired me as the all night record man. I was 19 years old.
And what were you playing at that time?
Anything I wanted, but don't play too many Negro records. Don't play any jazz records. Don't do that. I mean, it was just a horrible format. Playing Bing Crosby and Glenn Miller, a few softer rock and roll records, softer ones. Changed all that. We changed that about 2 years later because I said, hey, you know what? This new music is catching on. It's been around for 5 years. It's called rock and you can't play that. Yes, we can. We're the sweetest listening in town. Yeah, but nobody's listening. So we started sneaking some, and I got working my way into the afternoons. And all of a sudden, they got some ratings. I can't figure this out. How come he's playing that horrible Negro music and they're getting ratings? I don't understand this. I said, yeah, the demographics are right. Well, you basically owned every kid from 14 to 18. To make a long story short, they said, let's do it 24 hours a day. Oh, no, So it was a mass exodus, no riddance, of the old school people, and I hired the new people.
And who came in? Who did you bring in?
I hired Frosty, who was Brian Forrest, who was just around the corner working in the basement CJOR, also playing dull music, because they didn't know. And I hired Brian Lord, who was a kind of a gopher guy we knew of him. A bunch of people. Al Jordan had been hired just recently, and he just wanted to be one of the young guys. He was 28 and old. So that's what happened, and the rest is history.
You had an amazing crew and an amazing time there, and amazing race. Ratings.
Yeah, we didn't know that. They'd like to have kept us barefoot and pregnant, Yeah, we got some pretty good ratings. We had all the kids listening, and it was the most fun radio station. I mean, the callers were perfect. And then they almost got rid of those callers, and now what the hell are they doing with them, Keep track, CFON AM, CFON FM.
Yes, I know.
Anyway, we're talking like an old man in the old days, but that was a fun radio station. It was so much fun that we went there after hours, just, let's do something like this. We'd stay up all night and create something, and put it on the air. We all go in my car and listen, because I had the best car radio. And then we come back and tweak it, and redo it. It was the second phase of rock and roll. The first phase had kind of died with Chuck Berry and Buddy Holly and all of that. All things. And then this wave 2 came along with the early Motowns and the early beach music. And then later on, of course, the San Francisco sound and all that. But it was a great time to be in radio.
Now, you stayed there until 1960. You made a move to the States.
Yeah, Brian Lord and Frosty and I had all connected with a genius, a weird man, still alive, but a genius named Ron Jacobs, who eventually went on to work for Bill Drake. And I worked for Bill Drake, too, in the United States. Ron was building a group of stations in America. I had met Ron in Hawaii in 1959 when he was running a radio station Jingo Kapoy. Frosty went down about a year later, and we just copied everything that Kapoy did, and they copied everything that we did. We were two stations, Canada and Hawaii, doing things back and forth, mailing tapes of stuff we'd done, and Frosty had this Fujikami the Warrior thing going, and Ron Jacobs invented that one. We saw it from him. But anyway, yeah, he said, we're going to build all these stations in the U.S. Yeah, right. That was the dream. You and Frosty and Laura are all going to be hired. Well, it got down to short strokes. About a year later, that started happening. And Jake was phoned or emailed, or no, he didn't email. This is 62. He said, I'm coming through Vancouver. I'm doing a changeover. Can I get together with you guys? So we had him over for dinner, talked radio, what else? He hired Brian Lord and myself and Wanda Frosty. But Frosty was about 2 years younger than us, and he was worried about the draft. He would decline. He was smart, but we had more fun.
So that was...
62, yeah.
62 to 65 at KMAC.
No, it's KMAC.
KMAC,
Was KMAC with a little E.
Oh, with a little
that
E.
That was a Jacobs thing.
That was until 1965. And you were the music director for the original Boss Radio, KYNO in Fresno.
Yeah, that was across the street, down the street. KYNO was...
How did the changeover happen?
The company that Ron Jacobs worked for was out of eastern U.S. Coal Green Broadcasting of the Columbia Green Rivers out of the eastern U.S. took this dead station called KMAK. It was owned by a furniture store, and they played furniture store music. Lombardo and whatever. And he hired a crew. Robert W. Morgan was one, myself. He hired Brian Lord, and they got the two radio stations going on the mainland, KMAK in Fresno, and before that, the station in San Bernardino, K-Men. And of course, Jacobs loved those K/call letters. So we were the K-Makers and the K-Men, and it was a great rival between us. And we had one Canadian at each station. Brian Lord went to San Bernardino. They got on the air first, and then we came along a few months later, and I was the lone Canadian. And we were both music directors at both stations, respectively. Ron Jacobs was befriended by Bill Drake, the legend, the soon-to-be legend. Bill Drake was hired because we annihilated the other Fresno top 40 station, KYNO. It was a really old men kind of rock and roll station. I mean, these guys were 28 and 32. What did they know? So KMAC got destroyed because Jacobs was hired away to be consultant for Bill Drake, i.e. KHJ Los Angeles. And the station started dying. And slowly people were being picked away. Drake was smart. He had this is still very technical stuff, but Bill Drake was the program director of the Fresno station just before the whole Boss Radio thing bore. But he went into markets because we had destroyed KYNO, and he went into markets and took people away from the other station, but didn't put them on his station. He put them on his station in another market. Destroyed two markets, you know, genius. It was like playing chess. So I moved over to KYNO. I was music director there, an afternoon drive, and filed records and whatever. Then the whole thing fell apart because all these people were promised, hey, you're going to be in Los Angeles, baby. You're going to be in San Francisco. You're going to be in San Diego. You're going to be in Boston. You're going to be in Detroit. You're going to be in Windsor, our Canadian station. So it fell apart. So I got another phone call from Frosty from Canada, Southern California. He said, what are you doing? I said, pretty frustrated. He said, there's an opening at KOL in Seattle. They're a top 40 station, but they're not very good. KGR is killing them. Why don't you make a tape and send it? I did. I was hired. And they flew me up, and I went to work the next day.
Were you doing the music there as well?
Yeah, music there. And after about a month or two on the air, the idiot who had hired me moved to somewhere else. And I guess I could be the program director. And I really hadn't been with that title before. And I was doing mornings, which I'm not a morning guy. I did 6 to 9 a.m. 10 to 9, I woke up. Well, that was 10 minutes were great. But I was up against Pat O'Day and all that crew at KJR, a legendary station. So that was an interesting war. We did the whole thing. I was program director, and I'd worked for Drake, and I've been compliments since saying it was the best non-Drake owned Boss Radio format, because I knew the format inside out. I knew the jingles, I knew the thing,
the clock.
Exactly, yeah, Boss Radio and all that.
When did you leave there and why?
I left there because I worked myself into a hospital. I had never been in a hospital in my life. I was working 6 days a week and usually 7. I was program director. I was music director. I was doing a long air shift. I had 2 little kids at home. I had a wife who was an alcoholic. This is fun, right? On Sundays, we just crashed. But on Sundays, all my Canadian friends would came down. Hey, Dave and Darlene live in Seattle.
Party
we'll sleep on the living room floor. Don't worry about the bedrooms. I actually was not feeling very well in the hospital. I was walking around. I'd never been sick in my life. I'd never been in a hospital. I wasn't even born in a hospital. I got sick and I went to a doctor and he says, you've got 106 degree temperature. I got walking pneumonia. Put me in a hospital, first time. I was in there for about a week. And when I got out of the hospital, the crew had all come to see me, and they had to throw them out because there were too many guests. But all of a sudden, the radio station had changed. New program director, a new music format. Oh, if you want a job, Dave, well, you have to talk to such and such. She's running it now. We'll see. Well, I got on the phone.
And what happened? Where did you go next?
I went to Southern California, to the sister station of a station I started out at. Everybody following this, there'll be a test later on, so take notes. I went back to the sister station, we used to call that a lot, in San Bernardino, which was the reason we got to the U.S. And that station had fallen apart. It had started, it was around Jacob's station, but everybody had bailed out. There was some major drugs going on with a lot of folks there that screwed up a lot of people's minds and careers. And I walked out. I thought, so I phoned, and I knew the GM. It was a very Republican guy, and I wasn't. He said, Dave, we'd love to have you here. When can you be here? I said, well, I've got furniture. I'll take care of that. And, I've got two little kids, and two and four. Well, we'll take care of that. So anyway, to make a long story short, I would end up at the station. It was in a cow pasture, San Bernardino, California. It was bad then, but it's worse now. I've been back there, and it's just a horrible town. But anyway, it was a cooking radio station. I mean, that's where Ron Jacobs first started, the mainland. And I walked in the building. There were three guys on the air. And they said, thank God you're here. Now we got four guys. We're doing 6-hour shifts instead of 8. I mean, there were three guys were running at a radio station 24 hours a day playing rock and roll. So I started all over again. Did all the things I'd learned and the stuff. And they said, finally, another Canadian here. So I had to learn to speak American, of course. But when we had drinking parties, and man, we did a lot of drinking. My Canadian accent would come boot. And they called me the Mountie. Oh, the Mountie's back, you know. Anyway, yeah, so I was there for a while. Again, killed myself, not too much money, no raises, got some ratings. Oh, Frosty called again, out of the blue, reinforced. He said, what the hell are you doing? I said, well, I'm out of work. I said, they've got some guy named Scooter from Minneapolis who's in here. Everybody else is walking out the door and the place is falling apart. He said, my God, how would you like to come back to Vancouver and work at CKNW?
Were you on the floor or were you already packing?
He said, you'll love Mel Cooper. And I did when I met him. So to make a long story short, we were going to drive up. My family and I just bought a new car, a convertible in California in the 60s. And we were going to drive up for Christmas or something. But anyway, we came back up. Frosty gave him the number to check with Mel. Mel, I called him. He said, why don't you come out over? We'll chat. That was the 3 o'clock meeting. I left at 9 o'clock with a job.
Long meeting.
Yep. Well, he opened the bar up. Got to me. So anyway, I went back over to my parents' place, who had been babysitting my kids, and my wife was there. I said, how would you like to come back here permanently? And they all jumped up in the air, you know, because by this time I just about had it with second market radio and two-bit thinking, and just, you know, I learned a lot and it was fun. And man, we every rock and roll act, we knew them, we had them on, we presented. I mean, the Rolling Stones played San Bernardino, first American concert, name it, everybody had a hit record, we were on it.
But a time to settle down and maybe mature a little bit.
Exactly. So Mel said, what can you do? I said, I can run your radio station, I can critique it for you, I can do whatever. He said, well, we're gonna have to they made a shift for me. I was doing AM traffic with Frosty 2 or 3 mornings a week. I was doing Sunday morning. I was doing Saturday nights. I was filling in for Jack Cullen, one of my idols, Jack and Monty McFarlane, are my two major legends, the old boys, up in the big jukebox in the sky now. So I was actually doing weekends. I was doing remotes. I was in the old Crystal Palace. People will remember that, doing remotes, Wasp furniture. I was there for a couple of years. And then they got the idea to turn the FM station live. Rock 101 now, it was CFMI. It was pretty much badly automated back then. And then a thing called Discumentary came along, which I created and wrote, and all the early shows. And
that went syndicated.
Yes, it did.
All around the world.
It was, and it was also bootlegged all around the world, too. Copies were made of copies. Somebody in Rotorua, New Zealand, said, boy, we love that Manhattan Transfer Discumentary you did. What? I was very flattered because, in all honesty, I was doing so many things, wearing so many hats at NWCFMI that I couldn't write them. After a while, because then I was in the full-time 6 to 9 slot evenings, following Rick Honey and preceding Jack Cullen. Boy, pretty heavy company.
What kind of music were they into at that time?
Well, they were all over the road. When I got there, Hal Davis, who didn't understand music too much, he thought we should play more Glenn Miller. And I said, Hal, it's 1976. You know, he's been dead for a while. And anyway, we kind of put in, it was a lot of commercials and a lot of talk and a lot of features. Great radio station. I mean, they had a staff of 70, 80 people, you know, 5 production guys, 5 engineers. That didn't last forever, but, newsmen, 16 men of the news and women in his room, and it was a sports department and promotions and the Crystal Palace and the Top Dog and blah. God, I never worked for a radio station like that. And they had the Canucks. They just got the Canucks. I never even was a hockey fan, but I had to learn in a hurry when I went to CKW because it was the second year. They just got it. Of course, nobody never won any games, but they carried all the games and did it well. They sold all the features around it, the Canucks Report and this and that. And that. It was a hell of a sales crew. They had 16, 20 people. Sev Gabato and all kinds of people.
Now, that was a pretty good long run for you from 1972 to 86, I believe.
That was, exactly, yeah.
What happened in 1986 that made you decide you were going somewhere else?
Jim Burge, Pamela. I was told I wasn't wanted anymore. It was a pretty cruel dismissal.
Were they changing a format, or were they just...
They just decided I wasn't right for the two stations. I don't know. That's as much as I want to say. It was embarrassing. They said, why don't you come in a little early this afternoon, just sort of run around some basics here. And I walked into the GM's office, and he said, let's go meet in the general manager's office. It's a bigger room. And there was like 15 people sitting around there. I said, is this a meeting or is this a crucifixion? What's going on? They said, Dave, to make a long story short, I was out the door in 5 minutes. Well, there were three phone calls waiting for me when I got out of the meeting. Dave, you got three phone calls here. One of which was Patterson Company, not Jimmy, but the broadcast guy, and said, we are applying for one of the new FM licenses in the city. They were one of five companies. If we get it, we'd like to hire you to do whatever you want, music director, on air, of course. Would you be interested? I said, yeah. Nobody else had called me yet. Although there were, I'll take it back, the station in the Valley called me. I was very flattered about that. So I went there. Yeah, I was the first to be hired when they got the new FM license. They got the license. I got the phone call from Frank Callahan, who was running it there. He was morning and was part of the license application. And I guess the Patterson Good Name got it. They phoned me and said, we got the license. Come on in tomorrow. You're going to work. First to be hired. We went on the air July 1, 1986. It's called Canada Day. And the thing was, if you love your country, play on country was great. Canada Day, the whole thing. Fireworks Expo. Patterson had put his hands in the Expo, was paying the future GM of the radio station $1 a year or whatever to manage it, who had worked with that NW. Anyway, I was forced to be hired and did afternoon drive, and they started hiring people around.
Who were some of the people you were working with there?
Colleen Troy, who I just ran into the other night at the Lion King opening. She was there, and we reminisced about that. She was our evening girl. The country, the rock and roll club, the sports bar down on Georgia Street, was then the JR Country Club, and we did live at 11. Whatever band was there, we put them on live at 11 o'clock at night. Sometimes there were two people in the club. Friday nights, maybe 50, you know. Frank Callahan and Sharon Graham were the co-hosts of the morning show. We had a variety of mostly males coming in like a rotating wheel every week for the midday shift. I was doing afternoon drive and doing music. I learned a lot about country. It was a good station, pretty good station. I also piggybacked. I'd always been a country music fan as a kid. I mean, I was a little kid. I used to collect Hank Williams and all this stuff because that was the root of rock and roll. And there was no rock and roll. And I used to see all the concerts. So I knew those old guys. So I had to get caught up with the current Dwight Yoakams and Randy Travis. There was a very hot time in country. Steve Earle, mid-80s was great country. I don't care for a lot of it today. But it's to their merit. They still have great ratings. And radio people appreciate this. They have great female ratings. They start about 12, starting from that station, go up to about 39. Huge female demographics, they call it. And for people who don't understand that, means that's the key audience to have females because they're the decision makers in the homes. We need a new car. We need a trip to Mexico. We need a new couch. We need a bigger TV. Okay, whatever you say. Yeah, it did well for a while. It was a little hard to sell because you had those bad cliches, old cowboy music. My dog died and went to heaven. I'm going to write a song. That wasn't country back then. People who had never listened to it. Those were great years for me also because besides the salary, we worked in a syndicated thing, more syndication, much like the documentary that I did. We did try to do a countrymentary. I mean, countrymentary. The same kind of format, Randy Travis or whatever, Ray Price, or much the same kind of format. Miles and the People, their greatest hits, stories. And it all filled, again, that Canadian commitment, foreground programming. But I also piggybacked a deal where I worked with my friend Mel Cooper out of Victoria again, where he picked up, we did a syndicated 60-second vignette daily of country. And it was sponsored by Labatt's. And it was on 60 stations across Canada. Canada Daily, brought to you by Labatt's. And wow, that was nice. Nice money. I was flying to Nashville three times a year with my little stolen Sony cassette recorder from CKNW that I never turned back in. They didn't ask for it.
Uh-oh. The inventory people will be calling.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, they all had a cassette recorder. Anyway, so I did interviews, and they were like little 60-second snippets, and they ran daily, and that was a nice little income. So those were fun years there also. We had a good crew.
Now, that went on until 1996, and then all of a sudden, you went from the FM station, stayed with the same company, and moved over to the AM station.
Yeah, well, they were trying to get a younger demographic on the air, younger jocks on the air, younger people, and I don't blame them. They said, you'd be perfect for Down the Hall.
Which was playing basically what we would call standards.
Well, yeah, for a while they were playing, they were actually a rock station on AM. Joe Leary was the morning guy, and Brian Lord, my friend, worked there. The news guy, WX Forever. Tom Mark was there, and but the other guy, Jim Benny. Jim Benny was there, and so I just moved Down the Hall. And they said, we're going to, I think it started, I know what happened. They were running religion on the 600 frequency.
That was called The Bridge,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, it was, CKBD.
The bridge sort of caved in.
Well, there was nobody local. There was a guy from Utah doing 4 hours. There was a guy from Minneapolis doing 2 hours. And there was a woman from whatever. And it was not very relatable. And finally they said, this isn't working. All the staff said, yeah. So they said, what if we put some music on? It is AM radio. Why don't we play some Frank Sinatra? And, you know, why don't we play some Dusty Springfield? And maybe play some soft Beatles. And you think would work? And they had a meeting with the staff. So I went up to him afterwards and said, that will work. I can do it. Move me. I can do this in my sleep. I know all these records. I can do all these songs. I can relate. My name means something here. Move me.
And
well, that was
and that station did quite well because it had a demographic. Yeah. I listened to this.
Yeah, because it was the old CJOR image, Christ Jesus Our Redeemer, CJOR. Mm. Really, it's original colors, owned by the Cripps family, who owned the drugstore on Granville Street. It worked. You know, guess what? I'm doing the same thing right now in Richmond.
This lasted until they actually signed OR off. They got a license for another FM.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're an old radio guy. There's always switching the dial.
I love KPLU out of Seattle.
I do too. One of my favorites.
And, there's an older guy on the air there Sunday afternoons who plays 78s and talks about old jazz. And I mean, it's incredible radio station. I send them $100 a year and write it off. You know, that's a great format. I mean, I wish CBC would do something like that in one of their stations.
This takes us up to 2008 when that came to an end because of the new station format change, et cetera, et cetera. You're still working.
Well, I was out of work for 2 weeks, you know.
Gee!
Yeah, 2 weeks. What am I going to do, you know? So, I got a call from Astral Media, which is the group in Richmond that own a very successful FM station. They switched formats there. They hired an Australian program director. They've got a really great, fun crew. I'm the old guy in the building, except when Dal Richards is there. But they treat me nicely, and I like them. It's fun. The money is not like it used to be. We've all been there, but I'm never going to retire.
Keep your hand in.
I'm 74 years old. I'm not going to retire. I love to
die with your boots on, most radio guys.
Whatever. I mean, I love fixing up my house and wiring stuff and building and renovating this old 1920 house. I'm a landlord, and I go out to Richmond a couple of days a week. And in fact, I'm going out there tonight. We do a thing called the backyard barbecue party. We bring a party to your yard. You write us or email us and tell us why you want us to come, and we pick a winner, and we bring a professional chef who cooks marvelous food. We bring out a bunch of beer. We bring out the sponsored wine. It's a backyard. I'm going out shortly here.
Yeah.
We all take turns and we get paid for it. Going out and hosting and playing a little trivia and just being folks with the folks. Yeah.
You picked up some hardware along the way, some honors, some gongs.
A lot of records I still have. Yeah. I tell you that, CDs. But
BC Broadcaster of the Year Award in the 90s.
That was very nice. Actually, it was the 80s. That was when I was at the Patterson Station. Yeah, that was very nice.
4 times BC Country Music Association Broadcaster of the Year.
Jeez, yeah, that was nice too.
Inductee in BC Country Music Association Hall of Fame in 1998. Yeah. You're a pretty well-respected guy in the biz.
Well, thank you. I love the biz, and I have a lot of friends in the biz. is. Yeah, thank you.
Which brings me to the questions I always like to ask. Favorite moment in your broadcast career?
Well, being hired at 14 years of age in a radio station. Man, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I mean, that was the only thing I ever wanted to do as a kid. I mean, I'm not a jock. I can't catch baseballs. I can't throw a football. And people dream of that, or being a hockey player. I dreamed of radio. I was a radio junkie in Hamilton, Ontario. I used to listen to WCKY, Cincinnati One, Oh How. When the sun went down, I would catch them in my little Westinghouse set, and they played country music and sold the Lord's Prayer in a pillowcase. They sold chickens. They sold Smoke No More tablets, all this stuff. I knew those commercials. I could do them in my sleep. I still probably could do them. I was a little kid listening to radio. I listened to WSM and from Nashville. This is when the Clear Channel stations would come bouncing in Hamilton, Ontario. And I had antennas strung up on the roof of my house. And I thought my dad was going to worry. I was going to electrocute myself. And I had wires. And that was my dream, to work in radio. How do I do it? I mean, I collected records. I had a routine in school. After school, I went to a place at Monday afternoons. They old used jukebox records. They pulled the jukebox records out of the jukeboxes on the weekends, put them in this place where they fixed jukeboxes. I would go in there with a carrier on my bike and go through 300 records, buy 5 or 6, 20 cents each. I would do that Monday. Thursday, there was a Kresge store, which is an Eastern Canadian American chain. They had used American jukebox records. I would go there and buy these records. They were all old records, 5, 10, 15, 20 years old records. Take them home and study them. You couldn't go online and do Google search, but I would go to the library and get books on who was this guy, who was Bing Crosby, who was Bob Wills. And so that's what I wanted to do.
Some of your favorite people with whom you've worked.
Oh, gosh. A lot of favorite people. A lot of them are dead, sadly. It's a killer. This job it can be.
Does anyone particularly stand out?
Yeah, I'd have to think. Well, Jack Cullen, for one. Jack was kind of like the older version of me. I was honored to ask to be his fill-in when Jack was not well or he was going on vacation. And man, I would do the show at his record store. I could never be Jack Cullen, but I learned a lot from him. You know, I'd ask questions. Even in adult years, I'd ask questions. What record did he make? What was he famous for? Monty McFarlane, who was another legend. I mean, funny, when I started at CFON, I was the all-night record man at 19 years old. And I followed Monty, or Jack Cullen, his all-pro at the record store, and preceded Monty McFarlane. So I would go in about 10 o'clock and just listen to Jack steal and learn, and then do my shift at midnight, midnight to 6, Wednesdays off. I think it was $125 a month, something like that.
Went a lot farther in those days than it did now.
But when Monty McFarlane came in, I would sit like at his throne and watch what he did and ask questions. How did you do that? How did you this? Because Monty had a very quick one, very funny stuff. Those are probably my early legends here. I had some legendary guys in CHML that they worshiped me. There was Little Davey and they worked in the record library. And Paul Hanover was the morning guy. Gordy Tapp was the end night guy. Various daytime people. And they respected me. I was the gopher. I'd go get the coffee and get this and whatever and file the records. But
a long career.
Yep.
Still working.
Yep.
Dave McCormick, this is very informative.
Well, thank you. Thanks
for sitting down with me.
Well, thanks for listening. Another old man wandering on here, and they pay me for it sometimes.